Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
Hi, thanks for being here today. It's a great show. We've got a lot planned and we're going to go through things, and it's a new format. So some weeks we'll be doing video with audio, and some weeks we'll be doing just audio. Well, this week we're combining our For the Love of Dog with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog, so we can have everyone listening to the same information. And I have some great things to share with you. So today we're going to be discussing about your dog's health. We have some hot days, some cold days. We've got days that are a little bit better than others. And people are stopping a lot of the winter activities, and now they're starting their spring activities. Remember, you are taking your dog with you and stopping for, you know, Starbucks or something, and here you are, and you had the dog in the car. Well, now you have to be careful, because we've had in the Northeast some 70, 75 degree days already. And remember that the temperature inside the car, even though you've been really used to having the cool temperatures, remember the temperature can rise 30 to 50 degrees inside a car if it's sunny. So even if it's only 65 or 70 degrees out, if you don't have really good ventilation, you take a chance of having your dog overheat or potentially pass on because they can die of heat stroke. It doesn't take that long. So make sure that if you do take your car and you take your dog in the car or your vehicle, either have a temperature sensor like I do, or just leave your dog at home. A very cool thing is something we're going to work on today, which is nutrition and how you can make sure your dog is healthy and happy and well hydrated and well fed through the summer. Through the spring and summer months, we tend to be more active. And a lot of you and your dogs, a lot of you may have put on pounds over the winter. Well, now is the time to get rid of those pounds. But you want to be careful of fad diets. And recently, there's been a movement toward vegetarian-based diets with no meat products, no animal products whatsoever for dogs. This is a problem. You know, if you put a cat on an all-vegetarian diet, it's got a very good chance of dying, because there are certain amino acids in the proteins that are present only in animal products that cats need and that dogs need. So if you're on a keto diet, your dog could probably be on a keto diet too. But if you're going on, you know, if you're a vegan or vegetarian, that's great for you. Listen, I hate eating anything that was alive. But, you know, our bodies are made, like as humans, our bodies are made to eat different things. We're omnivores. An omnivore is a creature who can eat and should eat both plant and animal-based diet. So it's okay for a human to eat an apple after a cheeseburger. I personally wouldn't be eating the cheeseburger, but you can eat the apple after the cheeseburger. And very, very easy way to tell what kind of diet we should be on is to look at our teeth. Look at our teeth. Okay, our teeth, we have incisors in the front, which are sharp, and canines, which are used for cutting and tearing, right? And our incisors are meant for cutting. So we would like bite into an apple, right? So that's incisors, because they're going through a semi-solid surface. That then we have in the back of our mouths, we have premolars and molars. And the molars are flattened. Now, yes, they still have some sharper edges because we do have the carnivore background where we are able to eat meat, and we do need to crush and tear at the meat or the heavier, thicker items. So we do have those grinding teeth. But now if you look at let's say a cat. Cats don't typically come back holding an ear of corn in their mouths. Dogs certainly aren't going to be chasing a bunny through the wilderness, and then they're going to go, oh, wait a minute, look, there's some wheat growing on the field over there. They're not going to look at the vegetables. They don't eat those things naturally. Not that they won't eat them, but look at a dog's mouth, a wolf's mouth, a bear's mouth. Look at any animal who eats meat. Their teeth are going to be sharp. They're going to have canines. They're going to have sharp incisors that are almost as if they were canines. Their molars and premolars aren't going to be flat. They're going to be sharp. So that's why never put your fingers into the back of your dog's mouth. Well, never put your fingers into your dog's mouth unless he's a good dog. Because even if they just close their mouths, they can literally shear off your finger because those teeth, it's like a vice grip. So you want to make sure that you feed the animal according to what nature gave it those teeth to do. Even the digestive enzymes. Dogs do not have the digestive enzymes to break down a cell wall. So yeah, we're getting into science. Oh no, you guys should have paid attention in biology class because here you go. Science is coming back to haunt you. Look at the idea of people. Okay, people, we can eat vegetables. We have enzymes in our stomachs and our digestive tract that are either acid or alkaline, depending on where they are in the digestive tract. And that's actually able to break down cell walls and cell membranes. Animal protein, so any source of animal protein, does not have a cell wall. Only plants have a cell wall. So what happens is if an animal is eating, let's say, corn or it's eating wheat, it can't really digest that because unless it's chemically or super physically broken down, the animal isn't going to be able to digest it. So it's wasted calories. It just goes in and comes back out. And that's why sometimes when you feed your dog something that's a corn base, like some of the garbage foods out there, and there's a lot of corn in them, you'll say, oh my gosh, my Chihuahua poops out a poodle every time he goes to the bathroom. He goes like six times a day. I can't believe how much, how much poop he makes because it's not being absorbed. So the cell wall is hard to break down. That's why animals in nature will actually go and after they kill something, the first thing they'll go for is the stomach and intestines because they know that it's already broken down. Okay? So their whole digestive tract is set up in order to break down meat and animal proteins. So if you think about for a moment how we can do this, how can we figure this out? We can break them down chemically. We can break it down physically, like a physical change or a chemical change. Remember back to bio. And the key is giving the animal what it would be eating in nature. And it doesn't mean you have to go on a raw diet, but basically the animal protein is what the dog is going to be able to digest because there's no cell wall. The animal protein for a human can be broken down because there's no cell wall. But humans and then herbivores, which are the animals like deer and bunnies and gazelles and things that eat a plant-based diet, most birds, unless they're eating insects, also same thing. So what we want to actually do is to make sure that we're giving the diet. We can combine it, that's certainly fine. But if we're going to give our dog vegetables and you want them to be able to break it down, you'll have to either heat them, either flash like parboil or blanch them at least because the heat will break down the cell wall so it's easier for the animal to digest. But also, it's going to make the dog absorb the nutrients. So if he's not absorbing nutrients from inside the foods, why are we feeding him the foods? Doesn't make sense. So the whole key here is to give your dog what he would eat in nature. And if you don't want to do that and you want to have your dog on a vegan diet, you may have a dog with issues. Not every dog is going to have an issue, just like some people can smoke till they're 90. And somebody will say, oh, he lived to 90 and he smoked 3 packs a day. Well, guess what? Maybe he would have lived to 100 without smoking 3 packs a day. We don't know because you can't average things out because everyone's different. But as a general rule, anytime you're going to feed your dog, you want to feed him what nature intended for him to eat. Now, there's one thing I do want to go through today as well, which I've had a lot of our listeners asking through the last several years even. What do I do? I feel like I should give my dog a vitamin. I feel like he's maybe not getting everything he needs. Now, if you have a dog who's got coprophagia, which is poop eating, it's a big fancy veterinary word for the dog eats poop, or if your dog is one of those dogs who's constantly countersurfing, or he's constantly going in and digging up tree roots, especially maple roots, because they come across as being very sweet and the dogs like them, so they'll tend to go after them, dig up your yard. Sometimes they'll go for grubs and other soil-borne insects and larvae because apparently it tastes yummy to them. I always joke it's candy-coated protein is a bug. But for whatever it's worth, the dogs need to have not only food that they can break down and absorb, but also they need to make sure they're having a high-quality vitamin supplement, something that's going to help them to absorb what they're not getting from their food. You can have the best of everything, but most people, even people who can eat anywhere and anything they want, most people do take vitamins. Well, there are a lot of vitamins and supplements for dogs, and it's actually gotten to be quite a cottage industry here where there are so many different people with different types of supplements, powders, and liquids, and everything else. Most liquids are not something that you can keep out of the refrigerator once you open them because they'll break down. Things with oils can go rancid very, very quickly, other than pretty much olive oil and coconut oil can be out. The same way as butter, although I think it's disgusting, is supposed to be absolutely fine. You can leave it out for weeks and weeks, but I wouldn't want that butter. So things become unstable, and the moment you open the liquid up and let air in, it starts breaking down. So what do we want to do? Well, what we're going to wind up doing is we are going to get our dogs on a really high-quality vitamin supplement. There are several good ones. People always ask me what I use, and I will tell you what I use. It's a phenomenal supplement. And actually, a lot of people take it, even though I guess it's not labeled for people, but we can't stop people. So think about what kind of supplement, what kind of vitamin would you want? Well, you'd want glucosamine and chondroitin for sure, because that's good for any dog. It's good for us, too. You would want a lot of antioxidants, B vitamins, things to strengthen the muscles, and calcium. You'd want a lot of different things, and there are a lot of trace elements. But the problem that I see most, where people think, well, if a little bit is good, a lot has to be even better. No. And actually, if you think about the way our heart works, the electrical system of any living creature, and particularly with humans, this is true, goes based on two different types of nutrients or elements, sodium and potassium. So think about sodium. We know that sodium is salt, basically. There's different types of salts. So that's sodium. But what's the other thing that these animals need? Potassium. Potassium is in bananas. Now, if you have too much sodium and not enough potassium, you can get muscle cramps if you have low potassium. You can have a heart attack if you have low potassium. It can actually mess with the rhythm of your heart because it's not allowing your entire heart muscle and what's called the bundle of His. It's H-I-S, it's not His, but it's pronounced His. The bundle of His, which is basically the battery of the heart. And if the bundle of His is not getting enough sodium and potassium in the right amounts, it starts misfiring. So you can have a heart attack, right? Well, what we want to do is make sure that there's a balance. Please don't go out and say, oh, wow, I'm going to go buy tons of potassium. Because if you have too much of anything in your body, it can throw everything off. It's kind of like putting, too much transmission fluid so that it overflows into your oil. Or, so those of you who have the old time lawnmowers, a single cycle lawnmower, we had to put oil in them, right? So if you put too much of something in, it's going to affect other things in your body. Well, same thing with dogs. So we want to give the dogs a good, high quality food, which I'm going to talk about another week, and we're going to give them a really high quality vitamin supplement. Now, again, there are many different types. There are powders. Some of the company that I purchase my vitamins from, and that all of our Merlin's kids service dogs are on from the moment they're born, pretty much until the day they die. They have the like a wafer. So I like that. Let me go into a little bit of why certain types of products are better than others. We talked about liquids tend to spoil. Not that they all do, but a lot of them do, especially if you have a smaller dog. By the time you get halfway down the bottle, it's probably starting to go rancid. So just don't go and buy the giant economy size unless you've got a bunch of dogs. You're better off buying it in smaller quantities, making sure you're not throwing it out or getting your dog sick because it's growing things. So the first thing is powders. Now, many years ago, there was something that came out, and I'm not going to go into specific brands because I won't knock specific brands, but I will allude to them. So there are a couple of brands out there that are sold in a powder form. So, oh, that should be good, right? A powder, and you can sprinkle it on. Well, a lot of times, especially if you're not feeding anything other than dry kibble, the powder just falls to the bottom. The other issue with that is that these dogs wind up, as a general rule, not getting the same thing. It's very inconsistent. So anyone who's ever had one of these special, vitamin supplements that's supposed to be the answer to everything in the world. Those vitamin supplements, if you think about it, when you first get the vitamin supplement, and the top has kind of the larger particles, even though it's supposed to be homozygous, which means, or I'm sorry, homogeneous. I'm getting into my genetics here. Homogeneous, which means like homogenized milk. It's chemically and physically treated and worked with in order to make it homogenized, the same, homogenous. So if you look at a bunch of people in uniform who have the same haircut, same eye color, same hair color, and are in the same uniform, they're homogenous. You can't really tell the difference. But that's not really what happens typically. What happens with powders is they're heterogeneous. In other words, hetero meaning different. So you can get from within the little scooper that you get within your package or a little container, usually the top has the larger pieces, larger particles, and the bottom has the finer dust. This is even true in breakfast cereals. You should always kind of tip your breakfast cereal around, like flip it on end a few times to try to mix it. Because if you notice, like on Honey Bunches of Oats or any of those things that have the really good stuff, it's all on the top because those are the larger particles. They rise to the top, and the dusty or kind of boring stuff is on the bottom. And then the very bottom is the crumbs and the powder, right? Same thing happens with a powdered vitamin supplement. So you don't want to have a powdered vitamin supplement that you're giving your dog because you don't know exactly what it's going to really be getting. So when you start out your bottle or your container, you might be getting 10% of one thing and 5 of another. By the time you get to the bottom, you might have 3% of one and 15% of the other. So day to day, you're not giving the dog what it needs because it's different. Now, take that one step farther. Here's another thing. Imagine that you're making the vitamin supplement. They're not making it in a tiny, cute little container just for you. They're making it in a ginormous blender, like basically something that looks like a dumpster. It's a big giant vat, like probably 5 or 6 times a dumpster. And they throw everything in and they mix it up. Well, how does that stuff get dispensed? It shakes. There's a little gadget that kind of shakes it a little bit so that it falls and the right amount comes into each container by weight, and then it's weighed. So if you say, for instance, that let's say you have the same product, you can get a different batch. You might get it out of the top. It might have a lot of big particles, and then it might have medium-sized particles. You might get that, or you might get the dusty particles. And that's where people will say to me, "Hey, Janice, why do I buy the same vitamin supplement, but it's kind of different? Like it doesn't look the same all the time." That's why. So if they're doing, thousands of pounds of this stuff in one container and this little thing shaking, you don't know exactly what you're going to get. You never know exactly which of these things you're going to end up having. And that's why it's so important not to have the powdered supplements for most of them, because they're just not homogeneous. So what's the best thing to do? I personally think that a tablet or a wafer is the best way to go. Now, when they do that, well, the company that the vitamin supplement I use anyway, I've been out there several times out to California to watch how this stuff was made, which is why I know how it's made. Well, what happens is they make it in smaller batches in an FDA pharmaceutical lab. So it's actually human grade ingredients. So what winds up happening is they take these ingredients and they mix them together and they press it into a wafer so that the wafer contains the exact amount it's supposed to, whether you get them from the top of the batch or the bottom of the batch, because it's not shifting around and they're using it pretty much right away rather than shaking it and shaking it so that it's kind of all over the place. So the type of stuff that I'm using, the vitamins that I use, which are really awesome, are actually called NuVet, NuVet. NuVet.com is the website. And they are made, if you just read those, you will not believe, but these things are incredible. I've had my Rhodesian Ridgebacks. Most of my Ridgebacks live to 15, even 16 years of age. Yes, I'm very careful the way I breed them and the way I train them and the way I make sure that they've got the best of health, they've got the best food. I give them organic food, but I really think with all my patients through the years who people have said, "Oh my gosh, his hair is so much better. He's not shedding as much. It even can prevent cataracts from some dogs." It's just a big immune booster. And I love that stuff. So that's personally what I use. And actually, if you want to check it out, it's called NuVet, NuVet, NuVet Plus Canine Wafers. And there's actually like a discount code. You can get what's called auto ship and save 15% with this code I'll give you. It's 40560. So if you go on to www.nuvet.com, and you put in that code 40560. They also have a glucosamine and chondroitin supplement, and I use that a great deal. So those are, in my opinion, the best vitamins out there, and certainly the ones that I've used for probably 14, 15 years, and I love them. My dogs go crazy. We joke about it being doggy crack. Dogs just love them. Now, another thing, besides the NuVet, they have NuJoint, NuJoint, which is more of a supplement that if you have an older dog or dog who's had injuries or has kind of funky conformation, you want to put the dog on that also, but the regular NuVet vitamins do have that in it. So again, that's 40560, and it's NuVet, NuVet.com. They have great natural products. Now, another vitamin supplement or supplement that I think is great is some of the omega-3s and 6s, but again, don't overdo it. The NuVet has everything in it that you need. I do, for my older dogs, put them on a high quality supplement from my veterinarian. I actually trust my veterinarian. He's amazing. And what he'll do is he has it's a very high quality brand of omega-3s and 6s, and I do give my two older dogs that. But for most people, don't overdo it. And remember that things that are oily or fats can be harder for an older dog to digest. So don't think that, oh, one squirt is good, four squirts is better. No. You don't want to use too much. And remember also that whenever you have, a dog with behavioral issues, you're also creating potentially something nutritionally, especially if the dog ends up having food aggressive or resource guarding tendencies. Sometimes it's because they're hungry, and a good quality food, like we'll talk about maybe next week, and a really, really high quality vitamin supplement like the NuVet, will be able to help your dog to feel more satiated. Think about it. When you're really hungry, like let's say you go to a great Chinese buffet, because we all know there's always a great Chinese buffet near one of our houses, right? We go there. We haven't eaten, and it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We're starving. We haven't had anything all day. So, what do we do? Well, we are starving. If somebody cuts in front of us, we're going to be really mad at them. We're going to be like, hey, get out of my way. You cut in front of me. Well, that's like 30 seconds or 10 seconds. But the key is that if the dog is really hungry, right? Like you would be at a Chinese buffet that because you haven't eaten since the day prior. Think about the same thing. You go to the same Chinese buffet at 5 o'clock, but after a huge Thanksgiving meal, you'd be like, oh, I don't want it. You'd tell everyone, yeah, you go ahead of me, you go ahead of me, you go ahead of me. So sometimes there are nutritional issues that can impact your dog's behavior. And of course, if you have your dog's behavior being affected by nutrition, get your dog on a really high quality food. We're going to go into that perhaps next week. Get him on a vitamin supplement, a good one that does not contain the banned foods that I've always talked about. But the NuVet is really good product. And consider also if your dog is older or the dog maybe is a little, kind of like coprophagic, and it tends to eat things that are inappropriate, then that would definitely be a time where you might want to think about adding a good vitamin supplement so that the dog is feeling that he's not hungry. Another thing, if your dog is able to tolerate it, if you do have a dog who's eating a lot of things inappropriately, yes, it can be a behavioral issue for sure. But you can also try adding some cut up carrots, green beans that are cooked. And a cup of green beans is only 35 calories for an entire cup, but it adds a lot of bulk. So if you have a little dog, maybe add 4 or 5 green beans in. Check with your veterinarian always first. And if you have perhaps, you have like, maybe a dog who is a large dog, you actually might be able to, give him half a cup or even a cup of green beans, and you'll see then he'll feel more satisfied. It's kind of like drinking a big glass of water while you're eating. You fill up kind of quicker, and then the dogs tend to have fewer behavioral issues. So we're going to go to a quick break, and we're going to start off on our second half of the show, which is going to be from shelter dog to service dog, the new part of For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. We'll be right back. And welcome back to For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. This is our segment on From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. Now, this is a really great segment because we're going to be doing this every week. The idea being, everybody who's ever rescued a dog has a different path than those of you who went to a reputable breeder who's like an AKC show breeder, or went to someone who really knew what they were doing with dogs. Unfortunately, a lot of dogs, even dogs that you buy from someone who calls himself a breeder, like a lot of these poodle mixes and mixes of mixes, they do tend to have nutritional issues. They do tend to have behavioral issues because you're inbreeding. So what I want to talk about today is what kind of dogs can you get at the shelter? And what are the typical issues that the average shelter dog might have? Now, if we look at it and we say there are about 3.5 million dogs every year in shelters, and we know there is a huge percentage of that, I won't even tell you, but a huge percentage of those animals who wind up, you know, either, well, euthanized. Let's be true about it here. Dogs dying. And you know what's very sad is that a lot of these dogs could have been helped. Most of these dogs I could have helped, absolutely. The reason that they have issues is not because there was necessarily something wrong with the owners, but a lot of them started behind the eight ball with poor breeding. So when you go out and you buy a dog who might be, you know, a mix of a mix, and you purchase the dog, remember, people who are reputable breeders breed to better their breed. I breed Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgebacks. If I don't like what a puppy looks like and it's not perfect show dog and doesn't have a perfect temperament and perfect conformation, it goes as a pet and it's spayed or neutered. So they're not inbred, but they're bred to be better. So we want each generation, kind of like you and your parents and your grandparents, we want to always make sure that each generation is even healthier and stronger and lives longer and more beautiful and more correct, because we want them to be better than the ones before. And that's why a reputable breeder of show dogs is going to do that. Let me tell you something. It's easy, and I'm doing this right now with a couple of my dogs who are super gorgeous and wonderful dogs, and also service dogs and therapy dogs. But I've got these dogs who are out there, and they're just kicking it. They're winning a lot. Now, let me tell you, because people go, oh, I don't care, the show dog thing. You're a show dog snob. Yeah, maybe a little bit. But I look for the same qualities in a shelter dog or a rescue dog or a mutt, you know, or a doodle or whatever you have, that I do in a Grand Champion show dog. And you should look with a very honest eye and an honest estimation. If a dog has very, very straight hind end, for instance, the legs don't have a lot of curve. So think about, like, we can think of a Doberman or an Irish Setter, that the hind end kind of comes out and sweeps back and then comes down. That's actually, if it's too much, it's not good, but that's actually a good quality to have for the average dog. Now, depending on the breeds you have in your dog, you may or may not have that. But the more, that's called a sweep of rear, like sweeping, S-W-E-E-P, sweep of rear. The reason that's important is generally the dogs who have more of a sweep in their rear, they have more of an angle in their rear end, have better tendons and ligaments and better bone structure that isn't putting as much pressure on the dog's hips, and for the front legs to be straight, doesn't put as much pressure on the shoulder joints. So there's actually a reason why you want to look for certain characteristics. So whether I'm looking at my Grand Champion show dog who won at the National Dog Show or won at Westminster, or I'm looking at a mutt that's in, you know, some shelter in Texas, I'm looking for the same qualities, and so should you. You want to look for proper conformation, because if you don't have it, boy, you better have some really, really good pet insurance, because this stuff is expensive. So let's start with conformation of a shelter dog. We first want to make sure that the dog is put together properly. And you'll say, oh, I don't care. Well, if you have a choice between one of them who has beautiful conformation and one who doesn't, assuming all else is equal, then you have more of a likelihood of having an issue where the dog might get injured or jump or turn quickly and hurt something because the conformation isn't good. So conformation is really important. You want straight legs unless it's a dachshund or basset or something that's specifically that's in the breed standard, but that's why a lot of these breeds have a lot of health issues. You look at things that can't breathe or that can't be born naturally, like a bulldog or a Frenchie, they have very straight legs. They have very, very weak patellas, so their knees, which is the kind of the front of their back legs, don't have a lot of angle. So a lot of them have ACL or different. It's not an ACL, it's a CCL, canine cruciate ligament. But a lot of them have these deformities when they're little, that they're born with because of their conformation or their breeding or poor breeding, or just accident of birth. So you'll wind up having, $10,000-$12,000 worth of surgeries, and not even that it's the surgeries, but the boy, oh boy, to rehab a dog like we spoke with Petra last week with all the physical therapy things when we did the video broadcast. You'll see it can get very expensive. Now, don't be afraid of taking a dog who's 4, 5, 6 years old, because if it's got good conformation and the dog is a mutt, a true mutt, not saying that it's bred, mutt to a mutt to make it some combination of whatever somebody was making into a Frankenstein monster, like the Mr. Wally Conroe, who was the first person to breed a poodle in a lab, and he said he would never have done it again, and he opened up a Pandora's box. Well, there are, I'm sure, wonderful dogs, and we've certainly rescued a lot of these mixed breed dogs that were created by somebody in their backyard or a puppy mill to get to make money. But I don't care where the dog came from. I care that you don't get a dog who's going to have behavioral issues, temperament issues, health issues, because you just want to go and save a life and do the right thing. And I appreciate that and I applaud that. Well, when we go out for Merlin's kids and we're interested in a dog to become a service dog, we have to care about the conformation. We have to care about the temperament. We have to care about all the same things, the longevity, expected longevity, that we would have with a Grand Champion show dog. So they have to still fit into and follow the same exact structures and the same exact basically protocol. So when you go into a shelter and you see a dog who's limping, don't be afraid of him because he could have Lyme disease. And that could be why he's limping, because he came from, the Northeast and he wound up with Lyme disease. Or if a dog seems lethargic or very jumpy, he could have a physical issue. So if there's a dog that you connect with, look with your heart, but think with your brain. So if you look at that puppy in the or that dog in the shelter, and you go in there and you're checking him out, and you just have to see more. You can look at him, you can evaluate him, and then you can ask the shelter. Most of the times, the shelter is going to help you. When you have a basically you have a dog that maybe is a little harder to place. A lot of times a shelter will get a veterinarian, or you can check it out, and the veterinarian can test. But the good thing with a lot of the rescues, the dogs are already spayed and neutered, and the dogs are also kind of health guaranteed, even though they don't know. They will stand behind their dogs. And that's where we're going to talk to several different rescue groups and learn about what they do. There are some wonderful rescue groups out there, and they pull dogs from shelters, so you're still rescuing, but you have a little bit more of a history. And having that history is really, really important. If you can find a shelter dog is great, but if you go to a rescue, the rescue reputable rescue, and there are some great ones and there are some horrible ones. A reputable rescue will stand beside you. They will help you pay vet bills if the dog has something. If the dog has a problem, they'll be there for you. And that's why I work with a lot of rescues. I work with over 200 rescues and shelters around the country and around the world. We have a wonderful rescue that we're going to be interviewing called Sergeant Pepper's Friends that's in Aruba. And they bring the dogs up to the US and around Europe from Aruba, the ones that are just kind of on the streets. And you think, oh, that's great life, a beach dog. No, these dogs are not loved on the streets. And I've gone down a number of times and pulled these dogs off the street that nobody could tranquilize or poison or run over. And I go with a simple slip lead, and I can actually take that dog within an hour, and the dog trusts me. So that's kind of my forte and my passion. I love working with fearful and fear aggressive dogs. I do work with private clients. So if somebody needs help, you can reach out to United Canine Professionals, which is my company. It's 1-855, the number 4, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, PROS. So you can call up 1-855-4K9 PROS, and we will answer, and you can ask to speak with Janice Wolf, and we will help you to make sure that your dog is going to be okay. We're always happy to answer things. And we also have a special offer for everyone for Wyatt's List. And we have all about shelter dogs, rescue dogs, buying a dog from a breeder, what questions to ask, babysitting, pet sitting, kenneling, foods, pet loss and bereavement for those of you who either have an older dog who you're trying to make that tough decision for, or a dog that you've recently or lost, or a pet you've recently lost, where we want to help people. And that's Wyatt's List. And that's what we're going to talk about now, because Wyatt's List was created by me and a huge team of veterinarians, of behaviorists. My good friend, Dr. Temple Grandin, is one of our experts. We have Dr. Jason Berg, who is in Westchester. We're going to be interviewing him. He has an amazing place where I bring my dogs, even though it's an hour and 10 minutes away from my house. It's well worth it. And he's incredible, and what a guy. We're going to be interviewing him. And then we have Dr. Renee Alsaraf, who is an incredible veterinary oncologist. She's on our team. We've got quite a few others, top of the top of the top, of their fields. And these are people who can answer questions and help you and guide you. They can't give you actual veterinary advice, but they can give you generalities of, hey, this is how you should, approach your vet, and you want to ask these questions. So let me talk a little bit about Wyatt's List. Wyatt's List, our motto is educating people to save dogs. So what we do is we help people to understand what they should and shouldn't do for and with dogs. Now, once we take a dog out of a shelter, don't start treating the dog like he's your best friend. You want to give him things, but you also want to set rules and boundaries. We have this on Wyatt's List. Another thing that scares the living daylights out of me is people, young couples, who go and they go to a shelter or rescue, or even buying a dog, even from a reputable breeder, but sometimes they'll be, getting a dog from, a backyard breeder, some, mixed breed dog that is the dog du jour. And these people don't care about temperament, but you do. And now you have a baby, or you bring this dog in with your toddlers, and all of a sudden the dog ends up attacking someone, or nipping at someone, or growling, or trying to, do something bad. They can't potty train it. The dog is dominant. There are so many different issues that can pop up. And what we want to make sure that we can do is We want to make sure that we're going to take care of that dog right. So, how do we make sure that we're taking care of that dog right? Very simple. Get on Wyatt's list. WYATTSLIST.com. Wyattslist.com. Now, what Wyatt's list is going to do is provide you with information. Now, there's a free application, so there is a free app. And then there's also an upgrade, but I would suggest everybody get on there, start looking through. You're going to learn so much, and it's going to give you ammunition with which to help your dog, and have your dog be able to get the best of everything to learn and to understand, so that whatever it is that you want of your dog, if you want to be going into agility, you want to go into competitive obedience, like we had Petra, who is the for several years, I know she even won at the National Obedience Championships in the US several years. She's always a finalist, and also a Cruft. But there are so many different types of of training, and you have to figure, don't try to train a dog who's not good at something to do something that he's not good at. You want to make sure that the dog is always going to be doing something that he loves, doing something that he's good at, because by doing things that he loves and he's good at, he's going to have a better attitude. You're going to have so much better of a relationship with your dog because of that. So if you go on to Wyatt's list, and you can also call. If you're a subscriber, if you're a community member, you'll also be able to get on Wyattslist.com. You'll be able to get pet loss and bereavement counseling. So if you have, like I said earlier, a situation where your pet is getting older or weaker, or you have to make that tough decision, or you've made that tough decision, or your dog ran away, there's a grieving process, and we have several certified pet loss and bereavement counselors, including myself, who will guide you and help you and even work with you and your family on the phone, so that you're able to start, well, healing a little bit, because we all know how difficult it is. It just seems like it's impossible sometimes. Well, what we want to do at Wyattslist.com is make sure that your dog lives as long as possible, as healthy as possible. So you can go through, there are over 1,000 pages uploaded from myself and from our experts. And for those of you who really love the scientific end of it, my good friend Dr. Temple Grandin has put quite a few very difficult PhD type quotes in there. And I will interpret and decipher those for you and put them back into English. But it's pretty fascinating when you realize how much there is out there and how much misinformation. My God, there's so much misinformation. There are people who say, well, you know what they say. You should take that dog bowl away from the dog constantly, and then you'll have a veterinary behaviorist, somebody or somebody who thinks they're an expert, or like a local trainer. Oh, well, you don't want to do that. If the dog growls, just let him growl and don't bother him while he's eating. Well, how about when your 2-year-old goes up near the dog and the dog rips the kid's head off or bites severely or snaps? Is that okay? Well, of course not. So Wyatt's List is going to help you. And like I said, it's a free app. There is a paid app as well, but it's so well worth it. And it's also going to charity. So it goes to helping us to provide more service dogs and rescuing more dogs from shelters and rescues to become service dogs in 1.5 to 2 years through Merlin's Kids. And that's the last thing we're going to talk about today is merlinskids.org, MERLINSKIDS.org, merlinskids.org. We are a nonprofit. We take dogs from shelter dog to service dog. We were the first ones to use shelter dogs. This is many years, like 25 years ago, and to take those dogs and turn them into service dogs. Now, the fact that I'm a canine behaviorist and equine behaviorist that's worked with and rehabilitated more than 35,000 dogs with behavioral issues through the last 30 some odd years, gives me the gravitas to know which dogs are going to be okay. And we don't just take them and throw them in, you know, throw a vest on them that we got online and say, oh, here he is, he's a service dog. These dogs all go through 18 to 24 months of training. They go through a bare minimum of 1,000, but realistically, it's more like 2,000 hours of training. They're in training about 20 hours a week, all these dogs, and they can be in for 18 to 24 months. Do the math. Then we have these wonderful dogs at one of our university partners around the country. So we have universities in New York, North Carolina, New Jersey, Connecticut. We have a lot of contacts and connections all over the country. And these dogs that we find all over can become a lifeline for a child. So check out merlinskids.org. We're always looking for more people to get involved, to be fosters, to be volunteers, and to learn, because we give you amazing training so that you're able to help us to help these dogs. So for today, I want you to all think about your dog in a different way. I want you to look at your dog as not being a rescue, not being a grand champion show dog, but I want you to think of your dog as a living, breathing creature who is going to key off of what you say, but more importantly, how you feel about your energy and how you make him feel. And the more confident and clear you are, which is my word, clarity, you are and give to your dog, the better and more stable and the better dog your dog is going to be. He just doesn't understand what you want. But we also have to be clear that there's no growling allowed. There's no snapping allowed. There's no being bossy, because we're all here together to coexist. And if you go on to wyattslist.com, you will see what a normal dog should allow and not allow. You're going to have a blast. So thank you so much for joining us today. Please be here again next week. We're going to have some great interviews with rescues, with some of the veterinarians who are the top in their field. And we'll learn more about how we can do better and give better lives to our special dogs. Have a great weekend.